Well, it's another week, and normally I say I'm joined, as always, by pastor and friend Jason Hayes, but Jason is out of town, so I'm joined today by pastor and friend Chuck Hooten. What's up, Chuck?
What's up, man?
How are you? Know, as we were coming on the air, the TV in the studio was playing R. Kelly. He's gone bonkers.
He has
gone bonkers.
His life has come off the rails.
It is, and I don't know if any of the listeners are following kind of what he's going through and what all that. I mean, it turns out, it appears as though he's been abusing a lot of young girls for a long time, and his defense today I saw was, well, the girl's parents sold them to him. And I'm like, if that is your defense, now that's terrible for those parents as well.
Man.
But if that is your defense, I don't think that's going to end well.
No, that's
and it
not,
shouldn't. If he's guilty of what they're saying he did, he should go to prison for a long time.
That's
long
not what
time.
You want to say on television either.
Not at all. And so we're not talking about that today, but that's how current and relevant we are, is while things are on TV,
we
talk
unfolding.
About it.
Yeah.
And so last night we were texting, and I text, any ideas for topics? And you wrote back something like current events.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of current events. And you were writing to tell me, well, isn't that what the show's about?
The
and
show
I
about.
Took that to mean you wanted to talk about all the current events. And in today's news cycle in 2019, it is unbelievable what unfolds every single week. It's old again.
It never stops, man. It's really crazy. What's crazy about current events is things used to stick around for a mm-hmm. minute, and they just don't. So I don't know in our day and age why anybody ever makes a statement about anything.
Right.
I mean, I just feel like if you just hunker down and wait 15 minutes, sail through.
And it's the same thing if you'll remember, and it seems like it was a year ago, but it was just a few weeks ago, the governor of Virginia and saying what he said about abortion, and then the blackface yearbook picture and the KKK yearbook picture. And I said from the beginning, and I disagree with him on all of those things.
Yeah.
But from a political standpoint, I said what he needs to do is nothing.
Yeah.
They're going to call for him to resign.
That's
he doesn't
right.
need to resign.
That's right.
Because guess what? In 2019, everybody's going to forget about that. And guess what? Everybody has forgotten about
that. Yeah, because R. Kelly slides in. And, and the eight things that have slid in since then.
Yeah, well, Michael Jackson, R. Kelly, you have the State of the Union address, you have the border, you have the meeting with Kim Jong-un. There's just every single day there's something else. And it makes it difficult. You know, every week, Jason and I are texting back and forth, what should we talk about? And then you want to be relevant, but you don't want to talk about old news. And so then it's like, well, this was relevant today, but it's not relevant tomorrow.
And by old news, you mean something that happened 2 days
ago.
Yeah. It's really like, which, you know, goes to, I kind of tip my hat to the Democratic Party at the moment for keeping all of these things that they have going against the president at the forefront for so long. I mean, they've had to work really, really hard.
Extra hard.
To keep those those things
going
on and on, because it's just an impossible
thing. And the
thing
crazy thing about all of it is, even though that's kind of in the front, I think a lot of folks are like become immune to it.
Yeah.
They're like, well, you know, it's normal now. And if you look at the poll numbers are not really changing that much.
Yeah.
And
well, his approval ratings have gone up.
They're gone up, and his base has gone even more kind of deep into the, dug their heels in. And so we are so polarized as a country, that we all have, there's very few people, you know, anytime somebody says, well, I'm not affiliated, I'm kind of in the middle. I'm like, that's impossible in 2000.
Right.
You know, it's just very difficult to be in that space. And then you talk to some people, and you're like, what are your thoughts on this news story? And they're like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And I'm going, I bet that's nice.
Yeah.
To live in that space where you don't know. And that's, and I know some folks that don't have, any social media and any social media accounts, and they're not, you know, you say something, they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, wow, that's probably refreshing.
Yeah.
And then you have like somebody like my dad who still has a flip phone, no internet, and he'll call me and say, get on the Googles and see if you can find this. But he listens to the news all the time, so he knows what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
But he is so detached from how all of us are. Attached. He's so detached from the internet world. It's just it's interesting to me. So when anybody says you can't in 2019, you can't live without the internet, I'm like, my dad is he still uses a flip phone and he has no computer in his home. He's never used a computer. He's okay.
But that's really nice. I wonder what would happen in our society if for Ash Wednesday, everybody just gave up their phones till Easter. What our society would
The withdrawals the first week or would probably
people
be
would
miserable.
Go crazy. People would go
but,
crazy.
But if you could get past that, I think it would probably be a blessing. You know, now iPhone is every week they send me an update. You've spent this much time on your phone a day. So it's been it concerns me a little bit. They're tracking my every movement.
Well, they
which,
know everything
which
you
bothers
do.
Me.
That's right.
And then they're like, you spent this hour, you were in this parking lot. They don't say that.
But they know.
They know. They know exactly where I've been and all that. But it makes me go, okay, this week was higher than last week. Why is that?
Yeah.
This week was lower than last week. What did I do different this week? And so it's and then when your kid looks up at you and says, put your phone down, then you're like, oh, that's a problem.
What am I doing?
And now I have my son turned 8 on Sunday, and he is, he wants a phone.
Yeah.
And he asked me last night, when did you get your phone? Like, when was the first time you had a phone? I said, I was 15 years old when I got my first phone. And it was a big old Nokia yellow.
Of course it
you know,
was.
Giant thing that I wore on my hip.
You were so cool.
You could play
thing.
Snake on it.
You were
you know?
So cool.
And, yellow. What an idiot. And so, but Gavin is like, no, I want one now. And he has no idea what type of phone I had then. Yeah. Like it wasn't even, we didn't even imagine we would have computers in our pockets.
I got
now.
A beeper.
I never had a beeper. I had a buddy that had a beeper for some reason. My brother had a beeper.
The only person that ever beeped me was my mother. But I always liked it because when I
was
with friends, I'd be like, oh, hold on a second. I need to check
this. What I love is going back and watching like the days with MC Hammer, Vanilla Ice, and all the 90s hip hop
stuff. Please, Hammer.
And they all had their beepers on their belts or they wore them on their hat bill.
Yeah.
Like, that is some beeper classic
on the hat
stuff.
Bill. You got to let everyone. You know what's funny? I was at a conference weekend before last. I was leading worship at a conference in Baton Rouge, and the whole topic was taking control of your mind. And one of the things that we talked about was phones and social media. There was an article in The Atlantic that I read probably a couple of months ago, and it was not from a Christian standpoint at all, but it related back to the elevated levels of anxiety, depression, and suicide in teenagers. And it all went back to social media and smartphones. And there's a variety of reasons that is the case, but it's just always in front of you. You never have a spot, especially when you're a teenager, where you go home and get away from your friends.
Yeah.
For good or for bad. You're always locked in and plugged in, and everything is always telling you how you should be, what you should look like, whether you're measuring up, all these kind of things. And then for us, I mean, I don't care what people think necessarily about how I look, but I do care about all of these things that are going on in the world around me as they relate to my family.
Right.
And there's just all this anxiety that goes along with it, with things that I literally cannot control, that don't affect me in my day-to-day, loving my children, serving the Lord, all those kind of things.
Well, and even a bigger concern, and we're not talking about social media today, but this is a good place to start. Even a bigger concern is when the folks that are designing these phones and our social media platforms aren't allowing their children to have an iPad, aren't allowing their children to have iPhones, and they say, we know the dangers.
Yeah.
And so you hear Tim Cook and them going, no, my kids aren't having it until they're a certain age.
Yep.
And you're like, hold on, you know the dangers?
Yeah.
But all of our kids want one, and that now schools are saying they have to have an iPad. They're going to use an iPad in class, and so every time my kids come home, I'm like, I become that what I didn't want to become. I look at them and say, well, am I little Josie's daddy? No, but I'm your daddy, and you're not going to use one, you know?
Yeah.
And become that like that guy of no, you're not gonna use it until I deem it appropriate, and then even the longing for the likes, on Instagram and all those other things, and longing for the retweets on Twitter, and so
the affirmation.
Yeah, we really want that, and then I even see some there's a guy that I follow on Instagram because he has a big beard and he's cool, but
he's wise.
He's definitely wise, and. But he'll even comment and say things like, don't just scroll past without double clicking. I'm going, you're almost 70 years old.
Yeah.
Like, what is?
Why do you need that?
Why are you telling us that?
Because you get that little dopamine hit, man, when you see somebody liked it.
Yeah, and so it's a you know, we'll talk about that another day. But today what we wanted to talk about is and I think this is a good topic because you've experienced it personally on a number of different fronts is adoption. And what that looks like for the church. So the goal of the show is between Sundays, how do we engage in the kingdom? And one of those is by adopting. And not only do you have a child that you adopted, but you also have siblings that were adopted as well.
Yeah,
I'm not making that up, right?
No, and you're not making this up.
And so let's start with why should adoption, foster care, all of these things be kind of a pillar within a church, be a pillar within the Christian's faith to say this is something we need to be engaged in at some point of the process.
Yeah, I would say a couple of reasons, but, you know, for me, growing up, adoption was pretty normal. Like you said, I'm the oldest of 8 children. The youngest 6 of my brothers and sisters were all adopted from all over everywhere. We lived in a small town in Alabama, and we spanned the colors of the rainbow because we were a multicultural family. But for me, what that did for me is even in all of these things that we've been talking about recently with some of the racial things that we've gone through, it's always interesting for me the way that I grew up with brothers and sisters from Haiti and all these kind of things. From a very young age, being around different races, different cultures, it was just normalized for me because mm-hmm. it was in my home.
Yeah.
I kind of scratch my head sometimes, even in conversations, because I'm coming at that from a different angle, which is an amazing thing. And then now my daughter, Josie, we adopted 2 years ago from China. It's just another amazing picture of another culture that has come into our home. And it's something that we want to celebrate. It's something that we want to elevate. And I think when you live closely and you reach out your arms to people who don't look like you or did not come from your DNA tree, but then they come in and they become your family. It's an amazing thing. Culturally, it's an amazing thing. But on a bigger standpoint, it's an amazing thing from a gospel standpoint. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really believe that there's a couple of metaphors that God has given us for the gospel that are more powerful than other. One being marriage. You know, Paul talking about husbands and wives being a picture of the church. The second being adoption. I think that adoption and foster care and these things give us a better hands-on understanding of what the gospel of Jesus looks like than anything else. I mean, I think that if you can see what it is like to love someone on this level through adoption, there's a light bulb that's going to click on in your head of how you have then been loved by Christ, because that is the way that he has set it up. Ephesians chapter 1, verse 5 says we're adopted as sons and daughters of God. And mm-hmm. so it's something that he set up to show us what the gospel looks like and what it is.
Yeah, and we're going to continue that conversation when we come back and get us to a place of, we'll talk about practical steps, but also just the process and even what it, the light bulb you were talking about. Let's go into that when we come back on what that light bulb is and what did that do for you when you brought your little girl home. We'll be back. So today I'm joined by Chuck Hooten, who is the worship pastor at Shoreline. Also recently added to your list of responsibilities is kind of the theological lane, which we know worship and theology go together.
Should go together.
That's true. you're not a choir director. That's what we always called folks in the churches I grew up in.
Yeah.
But a minister of music is another one that we like to use.
But
one thing is important for, you know, I think sometimes we take for granted is anything that the church sends out, anything the church does, any song we sing, any message that's given, should be theologically sound.
You would hope so.
And
man.
So
you would
and
hope
so
that's
I,
the first box that you.
And
checked.
So it kind of made me when I heard that was going to be in your lane, kind of some of the things you were going to make sure. Hey, anything we send out is sound mm-hmm. when it comes to theology. Again, some things we take for granted, but man, I'm glad there's some eyes on that, making sure that, hey, if Shoreline stamp on it, you know, not just Shoreline, but if this is pointing us to God, this
church.
Is a gospel stamp.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it needs to make sure that it lines up with that, which goes into why we're having this discussion today on adoption and foster care and going and loving the orphan. And so you were talking before the break how it points us to the gospel. Go a little bit further into what that looks like.
Yeah, man, I think for me there's a light bulb moment that goes with adoption. You know, I said before the break, Ephesians 1:5 talks about how we're adopted as sons and daughters of God. A couple of things that goes along with for me, when we adopted Josie, she was chosen.
Mm-hmm.
We made a conscious decision. We are going to adopt this little girl. It was costly.
Yep.
I mean, we had to raise bukus of money to make it happen. And then on the tail end of that, it's forever. And she became a part of my family. Like, she now has my last name,
mm-hmm.
you know. And all of those things relate so perfectly to the gospel is what Christ has done for us. We were chosen. Ephesians 1
yep.
says that. Like, he looked out across time and space, and he said, I'm going to go get Chuck.
Yep. He pursued.
He pursued us.
Yep.
He, you know, we crossed an ocean to go get Josie, which is a long way to go. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. I mean,
yep.
God went way farther than I went to get Josie. And then the costly aspect of it. You know, I paid money out of my pocket for fees and governments and dealing with two governments at the same time, which is a nightmare
yeah.
at times. But my salvation was more costly than that, you know, for God so loved the world that he gave his son. You know,
yeah.
Jesus gave his life for my adoption. And then now I wear the name of God. And so all of these things that track along with the gospel through adoption, I really don't see a clearer picture of what God has done for me to bring me into his family than adoption. And I think when we begin to see adoption in that light, that it is a gospel picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just us running out and trying to do this. And we are painting a gospel picture to our families, to ourselves, to the world. We're going to experience God in a way that we haven't experienced before. And it's not easy, man. Like, you know, I think we get this picture of adoption sometimes. We're going to go out and do this. We're doing this for the gospel. And because we're doing it
yeah.
for the gospel, we're going to come home and it's going to be, you know, rainbows and butterflies and puppies and everything is going to be so easy and so perfect. And we find out lots of times when we get home, things are amazingly complicated
yeah.
and hard and difficult. And there's baggage and there's emotional baggage and physical baggage that comes with it. But man, that lines up perfectly again with that gospel metaphor. You know, Jesus brought me into his family with a lot of baggage, with a lot of mess, and I am troublesome sometimes to the kingdom of God, and yet his grace and his mercy, he still calls me son.
Yeah.
He still is patient with me. He still brings me along. So I can't overstate the gospel relevance of adoption and foster care for us in the church.
Yeah, and so when we have those conversations, and I think even with the work we do at Hope Resource Center, anytime I go and speak, I was at Cedar Springs Presbyterian this past weekend, and a lot of people were asking about adoption, and because when they hear about the work that we do, and people are choosing life and having their babies, they always ask how many adoptions.
Mm-hmm.
So Hope has been open since '97. And I could probably count on two hands how many adoptions. That's celebrated, but that's, I think a lot of people assume, well, you've served 30,000 people since 97. That means you're going to have hundreds of, if not thousands of adoptions. But the reality is, it's a difficult process, not mm-hmm. just from the standpoint of folks looking to adopt. We have a lot of folks that are interested in looking to adopt, but you think about that birth mom making that choice. It's one thing if circumstances arise and the state has to take custody of that
mm-hmm.
child, or
correct.
Or in other parts of the world, you know, something happens and the government takes custody of that child. But it's a whole nother thing when a mom, because of circumstances in her life,
absolutely.
Says, I'm going to choose an adoption plan for this child.
Absolutely.
Which is a brave and bold decision that we should, we shouldn't shame, that we
no,
should celebrate. Because the alternative would be termination of pregnancy, and we certainly don't want that. And so it's a messy, and I think sometimes when I tell people that, they're like, well, that's not what I expected.
Right.
and it's messy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I always think about in Genesis 3, after, Adam and Eve you know, after sin entered the world, and then they hide because they realize they're naked. God could have just blew everything up and started over.
Why didn't he?
But what did he do? He pursued. He entered the garden.
Mercy.
He pursued his people.
Yes.
He brought them out of the darkness. He covered them with by sacrificing an animal, which pointed to the gospel. And so even in that brokenness where we would go, we think we would go, oh, my goodness, we haven't been here 8 days yet, and you've already messed it all up.
Yeah.
And But think about it, even in our, I think I have four children, I think about their lives, and I think that no matter what, I can't fathom anything occurring where I won't pursue them.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
And then even more so with adoption, you know, when we have our children, when we produce children between man and woman, that's one thing. When you go and pursue a child, then that's taken us to a whole nother place where at some point, when you can have that conversation with your little girl, she's going to go, wow, you did go across an ocean to come get me.
You know what? You know what's amazing about that, man? We have this conversation even with my brothers and sisters, but, you know, in some ways, biological children, they are such a gift and it's so beautiful. But in some ways, when you're an adopted child into a family, exactly what you just said is the truth. There is a cognitive choice.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to come and find you. I'm going to come and get you. I'm going to bring you back to where I am at great cost because I love you. Before I've even met you, I love you. And so even for Josie, you know, her gotcha day, we call it gotcha day on the day that we got her in China.
Yeah.
So we celebrate a birthday every year for Josie, but we also celebrate a gotcha day every year that my birth children don't have. Because she has this other special momentous event in her life where she first came into our arms. Not just came into the world for a birthday, but she came into our arms. And that celebration is equal or maybe even more than a birthday celebration because it's just so meaningful. God brought us together to become a family. And in lots of ways, I have a birthday, but then I also have the day that I came to faith in Jesus. In lots of ways, that was my gotcha day, man. Like, it's not that I was just born. I was known. I was loved. I had a family. It's such an amazing picture of the gospel.
Yeah, I wish I'd have known that theology when I was a kid because my brothers used to tell me I was adopted, but they did it out of a hateful.
Yeah.
Your dad was a wrestler.
Yeah.
I remember sitting in a car one day and they looked at me and they were like, you see, we don't have red hair.
What older brother has not told that to a younger brother?
And I remember being crushed, but if I'd have had good theology, I'd have looked at him and said, that means mom and daddy pursued me.
Even harder than they got stuck with you. They were stuck with you, man. They came to get me.
Yeah, they probably would have just,
and then they would have beat you up in the back seat.
Exactly. And so, but it's funny how kids do that. And so as we look at that, what are some of the ways, and I know specifically even Shoreline hosting classes and doing things, because for some people hear adoption and they go, I don't have thousands of dollars. I don't even have the means to fundraise thousands of dollars. And so we have a minute before we go to break. After break, we'll kind of go into this a little bit more, but we can talk about there are scholarships, there are grants available through churches and other avenues, but also foster care is a great option for those seeking to get into the adoption process that may not be as costly financially anyway as some of the other things. So adoption looks like a lot of things, domestically, internationally, and that's where we'll go when we come back. So conversation today is on adoption, and so as we talk about this, there are many different lanes. So if you're listening and you're going, well, I'm interested in adoption, I'd love to adopt. Maybe we're not ready to adopt, or maybe we don't have the means or the funds, or I don't even know how to begin to fundraise. Maybe that's not something you do, or who to ask, or there's so many options out there. But here's one thing, and Chuck, you and I have talked about this before, some of our frustrations with the system.
Yeah.
And so if you want to adopt domestically even, there's so many hoops to jump through. Mm-hmm. And now one way of looking at that is that, well, these are humans. These are individuals. These are image bearers. There should be a lot of hoops to jump through, and I would agree completely. But then there's those moments of even when we follow the law to the T, we still get hung up. Why? Like, we did everything we were supposed to do. We provided all the funds. We did all of these things, and you're still telling me it's not official?
Right.
And then you see some families that it runs through quickly. And so, but I will say this. I've never talked to anyone that have said, man, that adoption process was the smoothest process I've ever been a part of.
Right. Without a hiccup. No,
and so for those that are looking, let's start with foster care. What are some things that Shoreline's doing to try to help get people engaged in the foster care process, fostering process, but also the training and everything that goes along with that? What's some things that Shoreline's trying to do?
Well, we have a ministry at Shoreline actually that was started by people at Shoreline. This was not a top-down thing. This was started by people mm-hmm. in our church who have adopted and are foster parents, called Open Hands Ministry. And it is amazingly active in the community. We do a lot of things, but one thing that we do specifically towards foster care was we work with DCS mm-hmm. to host PATH classes at Shoreline. And we offer child care while people are taking the PATH classes on our dime. That's not something that happens
other places. Which is huge. I mean, that's a huge thing. Yeah.
So we want to make it as easy as possible for people to come in. Lots of nights we serve mm-hmm. dinner. We greet the people who are coming. We want to come alongside what DCS is already doing, and we want to make it where people – we want to tear down any obstacle that people might have to come in. So PATH classes go several weeks. It depends on kind of what course you take. I think it's – I'm not sure. I think it's around 10 sessions that you have to take in PATH classes, and it runs the gamut of emotional wounds. I think I've forgotten the statistics, but it's well over 70% of children that are in the system have either been physically or sexually abused. Mm-hmm. And so for people who have never dealt with those kind of wounds and those kind of traumas that goes on, I mean, there's some things that you need to talk about and things that you need to understand when children come into your home that they are dealing with, that your house can be a safe place, where you can be a safe place, where you can help in those kind of things. And so PATH classes seek to at least start the conversation of how you can make your home and your heart and your mind able to care for a child's coming. So we partner with DCS to do that. And then beyond that, families in the church, we come alongside and just help as they go through that process. I mean, the thing about the church is nothing you ever undertake, especially something as momentous and big as adoption or foster care, that should not be something that you're out there Lone Ranger doing by yourself.
Right.
You need the church around you to come around you and help you. And Shoreline, we walk shoulder to shoulder with so many folks who are in the process, who are starting the process, who have already come home, who have already adopted, or in the foster care process. All of those things are important. And one thing that you said, you know, Lanes, as far as finances and all those kind of things, one thing about working with the state, with DCS is, you know, you say, I want to make an impact. I want to make a difference in foster care and adoption. The place Emily and I actually started was with DCS. We were in PATH classes before God, just through really cool means, moved us into international adoption through China. But where we started was, and so if you just want to find out some stuff, you could just start by going to PATH classes. You could mm-hmm. just go and say, let me see what this looks like. Let me see. It doesn't commit you to do anything. But you could just go sit and begin to take the classes and say, man, is this something that my family should be a part of?
Right. And the truth of the matter is, a lot of times, especially in the Southern Baptist denomination and in the South, many folks are more conservative. And so we have strong opinions about government and whether it needs to be small or big. Mm-hmm. But the reality is DCS is always going to be around. And so we can either sit on the sideline, some would say the shoreline,
yeah.
and scream at the government entities around us and say, you need to be doing this better. Why aren't you doing this better? But the fact remains, a lot of times DCS is understaffed.
Mm-hmm.
They are fatigued because of what they see,
right.
and the situations that they see. And I think about even the staff, the medical staff at Hope, that are constantly hearing these very difficult, hard, heavy stories from our patients, and maybe giving ultrasounds to patients that are just going through a lot of stuff. And then you think about folks that are working with DCS, that are working with these families, and watching kids be pulled out of homes and things like that. It's heavy. It's hard. And so what the church should do, instead of screaming, you need to be doing this better, which may be true. Yep. There certainly should be things that are done better. But how else should we get involved unless right. we say, we're going to help you make it better?
You know, and it's always,
we're going to provide a space for you. We're going to yeah. we're going to walk with DCS through this yeah. because then we have an opportunity to say, look, this isn't just lip service. We really believe this stuff.
Yeah, and it's really easy to stand and throw rocks when you're not doing anything.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many experts running around at so many things in the day and age we live in. And there are many, many things that I would change personally about the process,
sure.
Not just with DCS, but in any aspect. But the fact of the matter is, at the other end of that are children who mm-hmm. desperately need people to intervene in their situations yep. that are so difficult. And so the best way to help that is not to, as you said, to throw stones at the people who are doing their best to try yep. to make it happen. Maybe there's some things we can tweak, but let's come alongside and at least move in the same direction. Maybe as we're going, even we can say, hey, this is not as efficient yep. as it could be, or, you know, these things are not working the way they could, but let's at least put our foot in the water and yep. move that way.
Well, and then it's having the conversations. I mean, I'm constantly, if I come across an article or a piece of legislation from around the country, I'll send it to some of my politician friends and say, look, I don't know if this will help Tennessee or not, but it's worth a read. Read this and see what you think. But we have skin in the game.
Yeah.
And we're going, look, I want to be a part of this. I want to see these yeah. children. I want to see these children get temporary homes or forever homes. And the only way that can happen is if we're actually involved in that process. And then you have credibility, because then you have skin in the game.
That's exactly
then when
right.
you make a suggestion, somebody may go, that's a good suggestion.
Yeah.
Because you've seen how we operate here.
That's right.
And so I love the fact that Shoreline's hosting those classes. And we talked about before some of the issues you even had in going through those classes. You have other kids. And so what do I do with my other kids?
It was
hard. And so the child care is huge, because
yeah.
most of the time, a lot of folks that want to get into the foster care system and process and take care of some of these kids may have other kids in their home.
That's exactly right.
And so I would love to do the classes, but I got little kids. I when I travel and speak on behalf of Hope at different churches, a lot of times my wife doesn't come. And so they'll ask, you know, where's she at and what's she doing? And I'm like, well, we have four kids.
We have four children.
So they're not coming.
Right.
And so she's at home with them.
Right.
And so we're constantly trying to balance all of that. And so it's amazing what childcare, even we were coming in today talking about going on trips and stuff without our children. It's hard.
It's hard.
It's hard to even make that decision. And so
we're trying to tear down as many barriers as we possibly
yeah.
can for people who would say, you know what, this is something that I want to check out. Man, it's easy for us to say, hey, well, then childcare is something you don't have to think about. Just come in and sit. I mean, in a weird way, use PATH classes as a free date night.
There you go.
Just
That's
come
right.
in and sit. We're going to feed you and at least learn what DCS is trying to do in our community. And like I said, at the end of it, there is no commitment for you to have to do anything. But come and sit. Learn.
Yeah.
See what's going on.
And then what it has is folks in DCS who may be jaded toward the church, and sometimes rightly so, will get a sense of, hold on, this place cares deeply about what we're doing.
And we do.
And also they'll see people, they'll go, oh, well, we know they are fostering children and we know they are doing this. And so how, if somebody's interested in that, is there somebody they can contact at Shoreline? Who would they need to reach out to?
Yeah.
So our
website is just shorelineknox.com. And I think we have a tab on our website for our Open Hands Ministry. And so there's contacts there. And one cool thing we did, man, is over Christmas was we did this thing called the Give Project,
mm-hmm.
where we, through our three churches, Hope Fellowship, City Church, and Shoreline, we partnered together. I think you guys were part of this too.
Yep.
And we gave Christmas presents to every child
yep.
in the DCS system currently. So it's not just PATH class. We want these children. We want the staff.
Yep.
We want the DCS system as a whole. We want them to know that they are loved, that they are valued. We're going to send you a Christmas present.
And that they're not forgotten.
I think
so many of them find themselves in those situations and they think, no one is even thinking about me
we're
anymore.
We're for you. We love you.
When they get those gifts, when they see these things occurring, then they can look and say, man, there's strangers in this community that didn't forget about
me.
We
love you.
And that's pretty awesome. We'll finish up when we come back. So So today's conversation, I think, has been one of the best conversations maybe ever. And so, and I say that from a very humble, I'm probably one of the most humble guys out there. And so I say that from a very,
I am
very
probably
humble heart.
The most humble guy that I know.
Yeah. And so, so as we talk about, as we finish up talking about adoption, there probably are some people listening going, look, I'm just not in the season of life, maybe they're in a later season. Maybe they have really young children and they're just saying, I'm not in the season where I can bring any kids into my home. But there's some options for them to still help out in that process, right?
Absolutely, man. There's a group, the group that we adopted through is out of Birmingham, Alabama. They're called Lifeline Children's Services. They have a ministry called Unadopted. So in other countries, when you hit a certain age, they call it aging out of the system. You are not eligible to be adopted anymore, but you're still living in an institution. Mm. You've been in an orphanage your whole life. You've aged out. And then when you age out of the orphanage, these children are just released into societies. They don't have skills. They don't have the ability to fend for themselves in lots of ways. And so this ministry called Unadopted goes in and provides resources and training and care for these children that have aged out of the system. So you could be sitting here in Knoxville, Tennessee, or wherever you're listening to this all over the country, and you could say, I still can jump in and I can care for somebody on the other side of the world who needs the support and the love of something like that. And so, you know, you said something earlier, Andrew, about having skin in the game. If we sit back and we say that God's heart is really for the orphan, which he has said it is. Sure. You want to know what it looks like to love me? He says, care for the orphan. So if we know that that is the case, we cannot step back and say, because I can't do X, Y, or Z, I can't care for the orphan. There are more ways today for the church to put their hand into caring for the orphan than there has ever been in the history of the world. Mm-hmm. And so all it takes is just to look for the opportunity. There are people literally waiting for you to send them an email, to call them, to say, I want to help. I want to jump in.
There's also even respite care. And so there are some families that are fostering children, and just every other weekend, another family takes those kids into their home. There's training that goes along with that. And so it gives that family a break.
That's exactly
right. And then it allows for another family to love on this child. And so there's a lot of options. Maybe it's you have friends, you have people within your church that at any moment are going to be bringing a kid home. And so are you prepared to get them a car seat? Are you prepared to help them? Yeah, to bring them a meal, all those things. And so it doesn't have to be like a complete program, systematic type thing. It could mean, have you reached out to them and said, when that day comes, all you have to do is have somebody shoot me a text just so I'm aware this is the day, and we'll take it from there.
When we were in our process with Josie, some of the most meaningful conversations I had were complete strangers who heard our story, knew that Josie was coming home. She had a massive heart defect. She went to Vanderbilt, had a really long surgery, long recovery. They heard all of these variables that literally just came up, strangers, and wrote me a check and said, I want to be a part of Josie's story. If you go up to somebody who's in the middle of something like this and in this adventure for the gospel, but have all these pressures, if you go up and hand them a check and say, I want to be a part of this story, it is one of the more meaningful things that you will ever do for someone. And it's kingdom work.
Well, and then think about the stories you're going to be able to tell to Josie one day of not just that, hey, mom and dad pursued you.
Strangers.
But strangers came up to you. You're here today because God orchestrated all this. God orchestrated some stranger to walk up to me that heard that this was occurring. God orchestrated that doctor to perform this surgery. I mean, the pointing to the gospel and to the kingdom is going to be amazing. And so, again, it goes back to even with my biological children, I'm constantly figuring out ways and looking at them. How can I let them know truly how deeply I care about
them?
And so it's finding those moments. And the same thing with Josie, who, you know, somebody that's been adopted may have those moments of what happened.
Absolutely.
Why am I not? Why did they put me, you know, quote unquote, put me up for adoption or whatever? And we're able to step in and go, no. Listen to what happened. That God pursued us, God pursued you, we pursued you. It's a beautiful picture. Chuck, man, thanks for stepping in today.
I love hanging out with you, man.
And it's always a good conversation. Yeah. We'll talk again next week.